It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Paul's a little delayed by the snow in Massachusetts, but here's some good news. Mary Jo Foley has a big scoop. An interview with the top guy at Microsoft. She'll have the details for you right after this.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 340, recorded December 12th, 2013. May I call you Steve? Windows Weekly is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/windows. And by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device for 50% off the lifetime of your account. Go to itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW50. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers all your Microsoft needs. And one of the needs is, of course, Mary Jo Foley. She writes for All About Microsoft, the ZDNet blog, and she is a real scoop master. We are missing Paul Thurrott temporarily. He's stuck in a snowbank somewhere in Dedham, Massachusetts. We'll emerge slowly and join us right soon, right, Mary Jo?
Yes,
yeah,
he will.
Any minute now. Or any hour now, let's put it that way. But really, I'm glad to have you by yourself because you got a massive scoop this week.
Yes, I actually remember when I was taping a Windows Weekly a couple weeks back and I said I was in an undisclosed location.
That was where you were?
Yep.
Oh, you are cagey. So when the big announcement came down a few months ago that Steve Ballmer said, I'm going to step down as CEO, they gave a handful of 15-minute interviews. You got one of them.
Mm-hmm, I did.
And at that right there was a sign. This may be the last interview Steve Ballmer ever gives, and you've got it. You can see it on Fortune magazine, fortune.cnn.com. And I understand there's more to come.
Yes, more to come.
Do you know how you got? I mean, I know why you got picked. You're great, but did they say anything?
You know what? I would love to know how this all came to be. I've been asking for 20 years to talk to Steve Ballmer. It had been 20 years as of August since I had gotten to talk to him in person.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And I'm not really sure why that happened. I have some theories, but I don't really know. And then after I got to talk to him in August, that was when he announced he was resigning as CEO. I started already right then putting in bids, and I said, I want one more interview with him before he leaves. I want one more. But I wasn't the only one doing that. Everybody's doing that. Yeah. All the journalists want the last interview, right?
Sure.
So I just kind of was petitioning and petitioning, giving ideas about what I would write if I got to talk to him. And they called me just before Thanksgiving and said, okay, fly to Redmond. You got him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was great. It was kind of awesome. Yeah. And I didn't get just him, which was even more interesting. They also gave me a few of the other people who were very instrumental in the story that I ended up writing, which is kind of his legacy story. And I got to talk to Brad Smith, who runs all of legal for Microsoft. And I also got to talk to Satya Nadella, who runs the cloud and enterprise team and is still rumored to be one of the finalists to replace Steve Ballmer. And the one I was most interested that Microsoft helped me get an interview with was Robbie Bach, who used to run the Xbox business at Microsoft before he retired a couple years ago.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I got to interview all these people face to face. I had Ballmer for 45 minutes in his office, which was very cool.
Nice office.
Really nice office. It's a really kind of big office. He's gone paperless, so there's no desk in there. There's just these two giant screen perceptive pixel displays on two walls.
Oh, interesting.
And a big flat screen TV hooked up to his Xbox on the other wall.
Oh, but this is probably like the Oval Office, the presentation office. And then there's a little cubby hole where he goes in and maybe. He's got a desk
right.
and
his
a
real
computer.
Stuff.
And isn't actually working.
Yeah.
But it's this is I mean, how nice. Corner office, Microsoft, you know, CEO. Yeah. So tell all. How was he dressed?
There's a lot of funny stories about this interview. So I got to go to Building 34, which is all, where all the executives sit, who are the top executives, right? So we're walking down the hall, and I'm looking at the nameplates on all the doors, and there's Tony Bates' office. There's Lisa Brummel's office.
Wow.
And that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Then I went into Ballmer's office, and he has all these like upholstered chairs in there. So he just plunks down in an upholstered chair, and he's wearing his usual trademark khakis and button-down shirt. And he just kind of kicks back and looks like he's in his living room, like having a conversation. Like it was definitely not a formal interview at all.
And so he was relaxed. He was
very relaxed. And you know, this was interesting to me because a few weeks before I got to interview him, the Wall Street Journal got to interview him. And they described the situation for them was he was very agitated and he still wasn't sure. He was very emotional. But when I talked to him, I felt like he's at peace now with the decision to move forward. And he just felt kind of like two people chatting, really. He didn't feel like he had a lot of regrets. He felt very reflective, but not teary or not like nostalgic at all. He definitely just felt like, I'm here to talk about my legacy. Let's chat.
Do you get the sense that he maybe is trying to craft a legacy, that he's trying to craft a story about his legacy?
Definitely.
Here's
so.
What I did.
Yep. He was very adamant when I interviewed him about talking about his successes, mm-hmm. as one would if you were trying to craft a legacy story. He talked a lot about, you know, a lot of people have a lot of criticism of me, but look at what I did while I was here. I tripled revenues. I doubled profits. I made some really good acquisitions. So he was very adamant in that I'm not here to say I made a lot of mistakes, although I definitely will acknowledge I did make some, but I did a lot of things right, and I want to get credit for it.
To be fair, if he didn't make some mistakes, then he wasn't trying enough, right? I mean,
good point. Yeah,
you don't want somebody. How long was his tenure as CEO? 15 years, something like that?
13. Yeah, 13 years.
You don't expect somebody 13 years running a massive company like that not to make some mistakes.
Right. And we talked about that too. You know, we talked a lot about what his regrets were and where he thought he did make mistakes, things that he would have done differently if he had another chance. The big one, as he told me in August, was Longhorn, you know, which became Windows Vista. And he talked a lot about it wasn't the operating system itself that was the mistake, but the whole process in creating it and leading up to it that was the mistake. He said he felt like he kind of let it fall through the cracks almost. He didn't have anybody who was really paying attention to how it had gotten off track and how they had tried something too ambitious to pull off. He actually said to me in a very candid statement, he said, I wasn't really paying attention to it. Oh. Neither was Bill Gates and neither was Jim Altman, who was running it. And it kind of fell through the cracks.
Wow.
Yeah.
How could you not pay attention to what must have been their biggest initiative at the time?
I know. Well, it was right at the beginning of his CEO-ship. And I think he was still, you know, he kept saying to me, he said it a few times, I'm not a tech guy. He said, I'm a business guy. I came up through the sales ranks. And that doesn't mean I don't know anything about tech. But, you know, I'm much more attuned to looking at the bottom line and doing business reviews more than I am, say, to looking at some code and saying, oh, this is in trouble over here.
You so say in your article in Fortune that what he feels he brought to the table was a business rigor.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That
definitely.
Was lacking before. With Bill Gates, it's very technically focused.
Right. You know, he said to me, and this too is interesting. He said, you know, Bill Gates obviously cared about making money as well.
Oh, yes.
He wasn't just a tech guy.
He was keeping score.
He was. But, you know, the thing that Ballmer did that I think a lot of people forget is he really brought this very regimented approach to how you look at a business and decide, is this a business where we can make money? And that was one of the stories he told me about the Xbox, which I didn't know at all. When he came in as CEO, Bill Gates had already said, I'm super excited about the Xbox. We're doing this.
Really?
But it was actually Steve Ballmer's call. Are we going to do this or not? And he conducted a 6-month business review with Robbie Bach and a couple other people. And Ballmer said, it was my call. Like, if I had said after the business review, I don't think we should do this, we weren't going to do it.
Well, he was the CEO by then. So
he was the CEO. And this was one of his very first big decisions as a CEO. Like, do we spend a ton of money and take on Sony in the living room?
And I wonder, had they known what a deficit it would have been for so long, if they would have said, yes, but maybe. That's a that's a gutsy move, a Ballmery.
Yep.
You did talk about that.
Yeah, we did. We talked a lot about that because he said he decided that he really trusted the team who was building the Xbox with Robbie Bach and his minions and other engineers. And so he just said to them, you go build the right thing for the market and I'll have your back, basically. And when it started, you know, being apparent that they were going to take a loss on the console because they were in a price war with Sony, Ballmer just said, guys, I've got this under control. I know that this is going to happen. Take it easy. And he just stuck with them every step of the way. Robbie Bach told me, no matter what was going on, Steve just said, look, just do this, make it excellent. And I know we're going to lose money at this point. And I wish we weren't going to lose money, but we are. And so he did tell me that his regret around the Xbox was it took them a while to become profitable. He said, I wish we could have been profitable faster, obviously. And I wish we could be at the point architecture-wise where we are with the Xbox One.
Yes.
And I wish we could have gotten there sooner.
Yes.
But otherwise, he said, I think we did the right thing, and I'm really glad we got in the console market and into the living room that way.
Just a step back. Is Satya Nadella and Robbie Bach, are they in the room right now? Or
no. So
this was later that you got to talk to them.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, this is interesting. I got to interview Robbie and Brad Smith first. Then I interviewed
Brad Smith,
Steve,
who's chief counsel.
Right. Then Steve was after that, and then Satya was the last interview.
I wonder if they're warming you up, because Robbie's obviously telling you the story of Xbox and what a great job the boss did by greenlighting this. And, of course, there's a reason why you meet with the chief counsel before you meet with the CEO, I would imagine.
You know, I got to say, though, I don't know if you remember, but when Robbie Bach left a couple years ago, there was a lot of rumor that Ballmer had fired him.
Right.
And
right.
That he had been let go because they were unhappy with things like the Zune and the Kin and the Windows Phone. But I thought it was very interesting that he agreed to talk to me and that he was very, very bullish about Steve's role. Because if this was the guy who fired you, I don't think you'd be that bullish.
Or maybe they'd kissed and made up. So he's back at Microsoft now, right?
No, he's not.
He's not.
No, Robbie Bach.
That's a very puzzling thing, then, to bring him in.
Well, they wanted to bring somebody in who actually could talk about what Ballmer did on the Xbox. So the people who are running Xbox now at Microsoft,
they really weren't there then.
Yeah. Right. So they wanted to give me somebody who actually could talk about, this is what happened. Like, Steve and I were in a room, and here's what we talked about, and actually give me the firsthand story, instead of somebody who said, I heard he was working with Robbie Bach. So
this is interesting. This sounds like a very concerted media effort.
It was. Yeah, it definitely was.
Orchestrated.
Definitely orchestrated. But, you know, I got to say, when you're doing an interview with a CEO of a top Fortune 50 company, it's pretty much always orchestrated.
That's right. That's why I don't do it, because it's rare that you'll get them to say anything that's not carefully planned and so forth. Sounds like you did get a little bit of a relaxed Ballmer. Do you think it's telling that you talked to Satya Nadella after Ballmer as if, and now let us introduce you to the next CEO of Microsoft?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I hadn't really thought of it that way. I think my conversation with Satya was very much focused again on like what Ballmer's legacy was.
Okay.
It wasn't about if you were CEO, what would you do? That wasn't the conversation we had.
This was really the focus was Steve Ballmer.
Was.
This is background.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's good because, you know, everybody's so focused right now. All the people who watch Microsoft are so focused on who's the next CEO, who's the next CEO. But I don't see a lot of people actually focusing a lot on, okay, what did Ballmer bring to the company that's going to persist after the new CEO takes over? And that's what I was trying to tell in my story.
Yeah. And maybe this was an attempt by Microsoft, or at least by Steve, to say, hey, wait a minute. I would like the victory lap that Bill Gates had.
If I were him, I would want that too, you know. And I think, you know, Microsoft knew the people at in charge of the handlers and the people who get to pick who gets the interview. They know I actually am a pretty big Steve B fan. And right. I've made it very clear in my blog that, yeah, I agree. He's made some pretty bad mistakes. But I think he's done a lot of things that have allowed the company to stay profitable, even when a lot of the market dynamics and the competitive dynamics have changed. I mean, people are still paying for Windows and Office, even though there are free alternatives out there.
Right.
That's a pretty good trick to do as the CEO and convince people to do that.
Well, they also know that you are and you're seen as very objective about Microsoft, sometimes very hard on Microsoft.
Yeah.
So it's not a puff piece. They know that they can go and say, look, you know, we brought in somebody who's tough and fair and gave her a chance to talk to Mr. Ballmer.
The hardest part for me in this, and I hope I pulled this off in this story, is I tried to go in with no preconceived notions and tried not to go in and write the same story everybody else is writing about. Yeah. Oh, he screwed up on mobile. Right. Oh, they missed this. They missed that. And I'm like, all right, let me focus on what actually he did at the company that's going to persist right. as they move forward.
Good.
So I tried.
Do you feel successful at that?
Yeah, I think I did a service in that I told a story that needed to be told.
Yeah.
I feel good.
So yeah. He brought business rigor to Microsoft. You said that, was it Robbie Bach or Nadella said that, I think it was Nadella that said, if you come to Steve to talk about something, you better have all the details, all the facts at your fingertips. He was detail-oriented.
Yeah. Yeah, very detail oriented, and Nadella told me some stories that I haven't actually fully fleshed out yet in my blog. But he talked about if you come to Steve with some idea that he thinks is nuts, he'll just go off on you and just say, "What are you trying to do? You're crazy!" You know, the old way Bill Gates used to scream right. at people in meetings. He said, "Yeah, Ballmer does that too." You know,
interesting.
But he said the funny part is sometimes you bring an idea to Steve Ballmer and he says, oh, ridiculous. We're not doing that. And he said a couple weeks later, he'll go, you know what? I have an idea.
Uh-huh. I have never heard of a CEO who doesn't do that. They used to say the same rap about Steve Jobs. Exactly.
Did they?
Yeah. Right. You know, I just thought of something. I was in the shower. It came to me.
Exactly. Yeah.
I probably do that too, come to think of
it. Everybody does. Power does.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Another really funny story that Nadella told me was he said, do you know about Steve's shoe thing? And I'm like, what shoe thing? And he said, oh, he has this thing where whenever he meets someone, he remembers forever what the pair of shoes were that you were wearing when he met you.
Wow.
I know. It must be some memory thing for helping him remember names because he's amazing at remembering names.
Interesting.
It's
a trick he does, probably.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what kind of shoes were you wearing?
I know. That's the first thing. I was like, what am I wearing?
You know, I'm so embarrassed. I wear scuffed up, ratty little shoes. But you know what? He's of the generation, as I am, where you were always taught shoes make the man, a well-shined pair of shoes. You don't go to a business meeting without having your... Which always seems strange to me.
I know. Even in tech, right, where people kind of dress down.
Yeah. That your shoes matter.
I know.
That's a very interesting detail.
It was a little weird detail, yeah. But we also talked a lot, and this I really want to bring out because Nadella, you know, he hasn't worked directly for Steve very long, I think 2 or 3 years. And he talked a lot about a lot of people think Ballmer is kind of like too focused in the past. But he said every time I meet with him, he never wants to talk about like the details I think he would want to talk about. Instead, he's always saying, what are we going to do next? Like, what's the next thing we're going to do? And he said that's something a lot of people don't get about him, that he's not all mired in the past the way his public image sometimes
is portrayed. A good CEO never looks back. I've really learned that.
Really?
It's just a waste of energy. Well, what are you going to do? I mean, maybe, I guess, learn the lessons, but you've got to be thinking forward because otherwise you really can get bogged down in, what did I do wrong? And it's not useful. It's not productive. No. So I think that's actually a trait of a good CEO, looking forward looking.
Yeah. Great. And then when I met with Brad Smith, the chief counsel, I actually learned a few things I didn't know there too, because I was one of the reporters covering the Microsoft versus Department of Justice case back around 1999, 2000. And they a lot of people have forgotten this part of Microsoft's history, but they were in deep, deep trouble on many fronts legally, not just with the DOJ, but also with many of the states. And there were complaints from AOL and Sun and Oracle. I mean, they were just faced with a ton of legal problems. And Brad Smith talked about this and he said, you know, everybody thinks Steve's a hothead or Steve's just Mr. Monkey Boy, Monkey Dance.
Oh, God,
and
that's
he's like, you know what? He would go into these meetings with really high level people like government officials and this and that. And he said, he's an amazing negotiator. And it's because he used to be a sales guy.
Right.
And he knows how to talk to people. And he has very excellent interpersonal skills compared to a lot of other people in the tech space. And he told me a few anecdotes of, you know, this is how he talked to the EU commissioner and this is what he did. It was really very interesting because, again, it's another one of those things, almost myth versus who the real man is.
Right.
So that was pretty cool, too, to get to hear that firsthand.
I love it that you went in with and you said, I'm going to wipe the slate clean. Oh, hey, look who's here. Speaking of clean slates, he's showered.
Hello,
he's refreshed.
Hello, Paul.
So you dug your way out of that snowdrift. Congratulations.
Thanks for waiting for me, guys. So it looks like at the top of the hour, we're going to be talking about...
This is fascinating. I'm sure you've already talked a lot with Mary Jo about this interview, but what a great scoop for her. And
it's awesome.
The insights are fabulous. It's really, really interesting to hear this stuff. And we do have other things to talk about. So before we move on, is there anything else you want to mention, Mary Jo, that you think is important? Else? You're going to do more articles, right?
On ZDNet. Yeah, I'm going to have a lot more on ZDNet. One of the next pieces I'll have is about the Xbox. And I'm just going to try to let people get a feel for some of the things that I learned that I didn't know going into these interviews. Because I figure if I don't know them, you might not know them too, since I've covered them so long.
My God, if you don't know them, no one knows. I mean, no kidding. What is just your biggest takeaway from this?
My biggest takeaway is there's a big gap between the public image of Steve Ballmer and the guy he really is.
Perception and reality often don't meet. You know,
he's been caricatured. You know, he's not that goon that people associate him with. And I always feel bad about that because he seems like a legitimately good guy. And as I don't know what you discussed earlier, but. You know, this is a guy who intimately understands Microsoft's various products. And there are very few people on this earth who can do that. It's going to be really hard to replace this guy.
That's what we've been saying, right?
Yeah,
it's,
and you see people saying he's not a product guy. He's not a tech guy. I've actually heard him give pretty deep technical, at least from my perspective, technical
remember explanations. Remember from Build last year, he did that demo. The PR handles were kind of shaking over in the corner.
I'm
went
sure
great.
They were.
Don't let Steve know. He's not known. Yeah.
He's got the mic.
He demoed in front of the developers at the Build conference, and he had to go and show Windows 8. And I'm sure they were just like, "Oh man, this is going to be crazy. What's he going to do?" And it was one of the best keynotes I've ever seen anybody at Microsoft give.
Everybody said that. Yeah.
Yep.
It's funny because prior to that, the best keynote moments in Microsoft keynotes. Were always guys who were not from Microsoft. You know, they had The Rock one time, I think, at the Xbox launch. Or they had some guy from the Army one time. Or they had someone from the fashion world one time. And these things were all fascinating. Had nothing to do with Microsoft, you know. And I have to say, for people within Microsoft, that was definitely the best keynote moment I've ever had. Although, actually, TechEd this year was pretty good, too. But that was a high point.
Did you come away, Mary Jo, with any insight into this CEO search?
No, I don't have any insight into the search. That just was not an allowed topic on this interview. So, no, I don't know when it's going to be happening. I don't know when the committee is going to announce. I don't know who it's going to be. Obviously, Nadella wasn't talking about this, and Ballmer definitely not talking about it. So, yep, I don't have any new insights there.
Kind of makes sense. This is not what this is about. This is about... No. Steve's moving on, and let's give him a nice round of applause, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Steve Ballmer, thank you.
Yep.
Also, we don't know what Steve Ballmer is going to do next.
Well, that's my next question. Did he talk about that at all?
Nope. He's like, I'm still evaluating a lot of options. And he's said publicly, I'm looking at everything from coaching high school basketball to working in education. I'm just like open to whatever.
I have an idea. What? Him and Alan Mulally should switch jobs.
Oh, man.
They should do a trade.
Oh.
CEO swap.
Yeah.
I got to say, looking at the new
Mustang.
It could
be the next reality show.
And seeing the new Mustang and also finding out that for the first time ever, the Mustang is available worldwide. The pent-up demand. When I know this because as I drive a Mustang, and we had a French exchange student, and all he could talk about was, "Can I drive the Mustang? Can I drive the Mustang?"
It's by the way, so we do this home swap every year, and usually with people from Europe,
right?
And people from Europe who come here, despite whatever prejudices they may have at home, what they want to be driving is a giant SUV, which they can only do in America.
American car, yeah.
And then they get to my house, and we have like tiny cars with stick shifts. One of them's a diesel, and they're like, "Seriously, what the heck?" You can tell them what they really want to do.
I did let the kid drive the Mustang, and he was over the moon. He was a Mustang fan, and they've never the pent up demand for Mustangs worldwide is uncalculable. And I think that nobody realizes what a good year Ford's going to have. It's going to be
too
awfully.
Bad they couldn't ship the '67 Mustang.
The new one's pretty sweet. Anyway, I think that Mulally's got his own victory lap coming up pretty soon. I think we can write him off that list. I really do.
Do you really?
Yeah. I'm now really having such success at Ford that I just think he'd be crazy. At this point, I'm putting myself in his shoes. Microsoft could be the biggest win ever, but there's a lot to lose too.
Yeah, there is.
And unless he had absolute confidence that he could turn that company around, I just say go out with a bang, which he's doing, right?
Should we talk about the new rumors? Are you ready?
Yes. Wait. Before we do the rumors, let's take a break.
Okay.
That's
I just got here.
I know.
Paul.
So you can go have a coffee.
Have a nice warm drink, I hope. So where were you, Paul?
So I had to do a presentation for work, and originally I was going to pre-record it because they moved the date to today. And because of the storms that happened this week, not here, but I guess elsewhere in the country, they weren't able to get the people who were going to do the recording. So I had to do that first.
And I understand it's kind of a little snowy there.
Yeah, here it's a little snowy here, but this is New England, and so it's not a big deal. But I think the snow that happened elsewhere was kind of a bigger deal because a lot of these places don't get snow or don't get a lot of snow.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're okay, and we will get back to more with Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. Lots more to talk about, but our show today brought to you by our good friends at Personal Capital. I don't know if I've done a talked about Personal Capital on this show yet. We interviewed Bill Harris, the founder. On Triangulation a year ago. He was just starting it up. He's former CEO of PayPal, former CEO of Intuit. And he talked about the fact that what he learned at Intuit was how, and I think about my experience with a personal computer, the first thing you do with a personal computer is try to make sense of your financial life. I typed in a program on my Atari 800 from Compute Magazine to balance my checkbook. I ran Money and I ran Quicken. I ran all of those programs for years, but it was such a pain. You'd get your bank statement and you'd slowly enter it in. People say, "Why are you doing that?" And I'd say stupid things like, "Well, I just want to make sure their math is right." Like the bank ever, you know, come on. But really what I was trying to do and what I was sort of able to do was get a sense of where my money's going, what I'm spending money on, and so forth. Well, it's gotten a lot easier. It's gotten a lot easier. And Personal Capital really now takes it to the next level. And I think that's what Bill was all about. So the deal is you don't have to enter anything in. Once you set up Personal Capital, it becomes your financial dashboard, your GPS for your finances. And, of course, it's, you know, it's kind of the irony of it all. The more successful you are, the more you need this, you know, the more complicated your financial life becomes. You've got checking. You've got savings. We hope you've got investments, retirement plan, credit cards, mortgages, loans. It's all nutty. Personal Capital makes sense of it all. And then, which is fabulous, gives you financial advice so that you can invest for your future. All for free. PersonalCapital.com/windows. Go there right now. Set it up. It costs you nothing. It'll take very little time. It is for anybody who wants to make sense of their financial life. You want to know how you become a rich person? You start keeping track. You start making little investments now. And this is how you do it. Graphs, charts, reports to tell the whole story. Personal Capital. This is free. PersonalCapital.com/windows. Don't spend money on getting your financial life in order. Spend money on your investments. PersonalCapital.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Paul's back. Of course, he's the editor-in-chief of the super site for Windows, winsupersite.com. And we quote both Paul and Mary Jo all the time on all of our shows because these guys really have their finger on the pulse of Microsoft. And
that's the feeling I get.
that bumping
it's
thing?
It's like someone stepping on my back.
I thought it was the big lead, hobnailed boot of Microsoft on my back.
I should probably stop punishing my kids.
anyway, must read. And you do feel like when you read the Fortune article that we're just, you know, scratching the surface. There's a lot more to say. And as Mary Jo has said, she will be saying it in her column at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Boy, I've learned something today. Both you and Mary Jo have day jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, if you want to learn something uncomfortable about me, I was about to hop on the podcast when I realized my glasses are still in. I haven't combed my hair. You know, I work at home, so.
Yeah, that's why you look fresh.
You kind of
groomed.
Forget.
Yeah.
So in my zeal to get my glasses off my face, I actually cut my nose.
Oh, great.
Jeez.
You know what's funny?
Yeah.
We started the show, and actually Mary Jo had some Skype issues, so we were able to restart it. I was wearing my glasses, too.
Yeah.
And then I put my contacts in.
We are a sorry lot.
We're just barely hanging on by a thread.
I'm glad we do this because I wouldn't talk to people otherwise.
Before we move on, there's, of course, still much more to talk about. Anything, any final thoughts, Mary Jo?
About Steve?
Yeah.
No.
What kind of shoes was he wearing?
What kind of shoes?
Paul, Steve Ballmer memorizes people's shoes. He could tell you what kind of shoes everybody was wearing.
Right. So this is his little strategy for remembering people and so forth.
I bet you it is. It's a sales
why
technique.
I can't remember. I barely know your names.
I know. You know? I know. Well,
he was wearing some kind of nondescript leather brown lace ups. But what was funny was while we were talking, he kept slipping his shoes off and sitting with his socks putting his feet up on the table in front of us. Then he was sitting cross legged in his chair and his stocking feet, and I'm like, wow, I guess
he's comfortable. A little too comfortable.
Wow, that is awfully comfortable.
It was very comfortable, I guess.
Was it just you or were there others? Was he talking to more than one person? Or
no, just me and his main PR guy, Frank Shaw.
So Frank Shaw, Francis X. Shaw, he can't.
Frank is the best in the business. I've said this many times. I love him.
Love him. Love him. But it's
They never let Steve just go.
Nobody.
Steve on. Journalist.
Yeah,
no.
You can't hang with Steve Ballmer.
I can't. You don't even do a vendor meeting without having a
should have brought
PR
him some beer,
there.
Mary Jo.
I should have brought him some beer.
He seems like he's a beer drinker, Steve.
I think so.
Did you talk beer at all?
No, he's always talking about trying to lose weight, though, because he's gone kind of up and down over the years in terms of his weight. And one of the last things he said when we were walking out of his office was he was telling me it was the day that he was on that South Park cartoon where Bill Gates had him killed on South Park.
Yeah.
He saw that
very day. Yeah, he saw it. And he said to me, did you see that? I said, yeah. And he said, yeah, my one of my sons calls me and he's like, Dad, you're on South Park again.
Getting murdered on South Park.
That is hysterical.
What would it be like to be his kid, right? Like one of the three sons.
Oh, Dad.
That's weird.
Oh, yeah. Dad.
Yeah.
So five.
He's like, I want to lose weight. I don't want to look like a big, frumpy guy on South Park, you know?
He's a big guy.
He's a big guy, but he's
got a powerful man.
Actually, I think he looks good. He has lost weight.
That's what I told him. I said, I think he looked pretty good.
He's a good looking fella. So he gave you five management tips. You asked him, what were the management lessons you've learned?
Wow.
Yeah. So, a lot of people are like, oh, who would listen to his management tips? He's being pushed out by the board.
He did run one of the biggest companies in the world.
Exactly. He did. And they were pretty interesting tips. You know, some of them weren't something too surprising. Like one of his tips was make sure you see the entire playing field, right? And not just part of it and make a decision based on part of the market. You have to think of how everything plays together.
That's something Microsoft's not done well, in fact.
So a lesson learned, right?
The
one I thought was the most interesting out of the five that he talked about was he said, you know what? Don't ever bet on one person or a dream team to be the savior.
I love that. Yeah.
And
that one probably came from experience.
I said to him, who are you referring to there?
Jay Allard, Robbie Bach. I can think of a few names.
Jay Allard, yeah.
Yeah.
He wouldn't name names when I asked him. I ran a few names past him, but he said, no, I'm just, really, I'm talking about me and Bill. Because a lot of people thought one of us should have been the savior, right? And
that's good.
I think he was talking about more than just them, myself.
Well, that's like the cult of personality thing.
It is.
I mean,
yep.
And it's something Microsoft needs to get over. It's something, Apple.
They're
needs
very
to
much
over.
That way. Yo, Apple, yep. Especially. Yeah.
Yep.
Very much that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, he had some good advice. And his last parting word was, I can say, looking in hindsight, I feel like I've improved over time and figured more things out. And I can look back now and say, wow, I didn't know what I didn't know. And that's pretty humble for somebody who's run a company like Microsoft.
Well, I envy you the time you got to spend with him. And it seems like it wasn't your traditional CEO interview.
It was not.
It's probably always, it's the best time to talk to these guys is when they're leaving or they've gone.
Yeah.
Because then they can speak or maybe speak a little bit more freely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does also sound like the book is coming.
Not for me.
From him. The next book, the next time you talk to him, he will be flogging a book. I almost can guarantee
sure.
you. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Isn't that where it's headed? It feels like it's like here's my reputation. It's a lump of clay.
Well, hopefully what it isn't, though, is like management book, right? I mean,
I want a memoir. I want a memoir.
Right. I mean, I could picture him writing a management book like a Jack Welch kind of thing.
Well, he's being approached and probably being offered a lot of money, but he doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't need money, right?
I mean, right.
but it's the type of thing he could donate that book money to whatever his favorite charity is. Right. And that would be one of his management techniques, spread the wealth.
I think that at this point, this is why this is so important. Nothing matters more to him, not dollars, than his reputation, than his legacy.
Yeah. Sure.
That's the point of all this.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll turn into the next Richard Nixon. He'll be like this prolific, well-regarded individual.
Well, if that's the case, then Mary Jo Foley is his David Frost.
Nice.
I'll take that.
Steve Ballmer, you created the enemies list, did you put Mary Jo Foley and
none of
Paul
his strategies were
that?
Wrong because they were his strategies.
Right. I can't make a mistake. I am the CEO. All right. Let's move on, I guess. I hate to do it. Gosh, we could talk about Mr. B all the time. Did you call him Mr. B?
No.
Hey, Mr. B.
Did you call him Steve?
I did.
You did?
I think we were on a first name basis by the end
of it. Hard not to.
Did he say, may I call you Mary Jo? And then you said, may I call you Steve? And you could take your shoes off.
Right. Feel free.
Feel free.
That one was unspoken.
And a little weird, I got to tell you, but it's a signal. It's a signal. He can't let his hair down. Next best thing, take his shoes off.
Well, you're in the lion's den.
Yeah.
There are different traditions.
So, let us move on. You said before the break we have new insight into CEO, and I did not see these notes when I mentioned Alan Mulally, but it seems like perhaps there's something to say there.
Yeah. So I'm just going to tell you the latest few
all
rumors.
Rumor. Nobody's saying anything from Microsoft.
Exactly.
All right.
No. Right. So the first one, courtesy of Reuters this week, is supposedly the Ford board is meeting today, in fact, December 12th, to talk about what they can say or should say regarding Alan Mulally's intentions about Microsoft. And the reason they want to kind of force this issue is everyone continuing to say he's a candidate. Even though Ford has given some non-denial type statements about is he leaving early to become the CEO or not.
Is this them calling him on the carpet saying, Mulally, what do you want?
Yeah. What are you going to say? Are you going to just say I'm out of the running? Are you going to say I'm not doing this?
All right.
There's got to be a story to this because He has been consistently at the top. He has never said he wanted this job. I mean, he has never even said, I'm honored to have been considered. You know, it's right. something I'll... He's never even... And now it's like, you know, we're getting a little sick of you and the way you're treating us, Mullally. Are you going to show up or what are you going to do?
We should also mention this is a regular board meeting. This is not a special meeting.
It is. Right.
This is their
right.
normal Thursday meeting.
It is.
Mullally is a board member, so presumably he'd be there.
Well, they said he might be there and he might not.
Well, if he's not, then what are you going to put him on a conference call or what are you
going to
do?
We can't get this guy to return an email. What's going on?
Remember, the board has Fords on it. I mean, like... Ford.
Like Edsel Ford.
Yeah. yeah. So yeah. they have some clout. This is not a board. This is not like the Microsoft board. This is, these are some heavy people. And I imagine that what they're going to say is, come on, Alan, just make it. Don't, none of this denial. Deny the thing and move on. And I think Mullally is, I am not kidding, headed into what everybody will hail as the greatest year for Ford ever. Big profits, big successes globally. Their global strategy is coming to fruition this year, you know, 2014. And he's going to go off into the sunset as a huge success. And
you
I bet
he's going to retire?
I bet. Yeah, well, he had planned to.
How could he not
retire?
He's
68.
I know. Go travel and spend time with your family.
I mean, he told me I'm preparing my retirement a year ago.
Yeah.
He's been planning this for some time. He's going to go out on, and I bet you, of course, he's flattered and he's kind of in the back of his mind thinking, well, maybe should I? And these guys are cocky. There's nothing more cocky than a CEO. And I bet you he thinks, just like I saved Ford, I could save Microsoft. But you know what?
Here's the problem. This is like Michael Jordan going to play for the Capitals or whatever he did.
Exactly.
You know, you cannot relive past glory. And let's face it, I don't care how successful he is at Microsoft, it's never going to be as dramatic as what he did at Ford. This can only diminish his legacy.
Yep. Exact. I think that's what the
board's
going
to say. As much as I would love this guy to, stick around.
There's no point. You're a hero, Alan. Enjoy
You've
your life.
Won.
Enjoy the grandkids. Relax. And I'm sure that's what will happen. I have
no doubt. There's an interesting sentence in the Reuters story about all this. They said the board, a source close to the board said, you know what? Every time now that Ford does something, we introduce a new Mustang. Everybody just wants to say, is Mullally the next Microsoft CEO? And he said, we're sick of it. We want to talk about Ford. We don't want to talk about Microsoft, right?
Well, I think it's no accident that this week it was all about the Mustang.
Right. Although there were quotes from Edsel Ford saying somebody asked him about Mullally and Microsoft and instead of about the Mustang.
It's really irritating.
So I think they just need to have him say either – okay, I'm considering
it. What's the theory here, though? Like, if you say he'll be the next CEO enough, he's the next CEO.
Yeah, no, I think that's what's going on. I think this is wishful thinking on John Thompson's part. And me, on my part, I'm wishful thinking.
Well, the ones who really want Mullally are some people on Wall Street really want him. Because they said they need an outsider, they need a turnaround expert, and he would be great. Because he's been mentoring Steve Ballmer and talking to Steve Ballmer already. So he already kind of.
So, by the way, I don't want to jump ahead to the next topic, but I think it's worth pointing out that there are parts of Microsoft that I think have already kind of turned around, you know, including potentially the Windows client team. Mm-hmm. It seems like after a while of doing the wrong thing, that these guys on their own are suddenly doing the right thing. It's almost like even without adult supervision, something nice has occurred, right? So, people debate whether Microsoft needs a turnaround in some ways or whether, they're not in the situation that, say, that Ford was in or whatever, or the situation that Apple was in, 15 years ago, whatever that was. I don't know. They're doing all right. it seems.
I know.
The other thing I would say, I don't know if it's a rumor, is does it have to be one guy?
Right.
That's something I'm wondering as well.
Yeah.
I've heard co-CEO rumors are abounding or you get somebody in there who's kind of grooming the next group
of
considered candidates.
That would be ideal for Steve Ballmer because talk about legacy. We couldn't replace you with one guy.
Right.
We needed three.
Yep. Right. And that's a nice middle finger you can extend to every one of that guy's critics on your way out the door. I was so good at my job that they replaced me with two people.
Although, I got to think Steve doesn't have a lot of input. Bomber doesn't have a lot of input on this. And
no, but I mean, that's the... But talk about legacy, right?
Be good
for him.
That
should happen.
Right.
That looks...
But
that
I don't think
reflects
that's...
reflects wonderfully.
That's not a consideration in the search,
no,
probably.
No. Yeah. No.
They're going to have a hard time. That's, you know, the story's never changed there.
Who's this Pat Gelsinger? Who's that guy?
Oh, man. Yeah, so today, in addition to this whole thing about Mulally and Ford.
This is Kara Swisher's fantasy?
Kara Swisher. I don't know where she got it, but you know what? She was the one who's been, who was first.
I was just going to say something about unicorns, and there's a picture of a horse.
It's her fantasy.
That's hilarious. She says, if there's a dark horse candidate, which she believes there may now be, maybe it's Pat Gelsinger, who is the CEO of VMware, former CTO of Intel.
Okay. I was going to say, I thought he was from Intel. Okay.
Yep.
And has done a good job with VMware, but it's a teensy company.
Yeah.
And easy compared to,
you know,
Microsoft
competes with VMware, you know, with their Hyper-V offering, obviously, and cloud.
I'm sorry to interrupt again. I thought, what's Paul Maritz doing? It isn't he at VMware?
Paul Maritz announced late last week that he is not going to be considered.
What does he do? I thought he was the CEO.
He runs Pivotal. Pivotal. Remember when EMC created the cloud spinoff Pivotal? He runs the Pivotal spinoff.
So was he the CEO of VMware before that?
I think he was. Yeah.
Thought it was. Okay. I didn't realize he wasn't.
There's been
CEO.
Musical CEO chairs over in the EMC world.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Kara also mentions Sheryl Sandberg.
Yeah. I don't know.
Sheryl Sandberg?
Yeah. She's a COO at Facebook. Wrote Lean In.
God. No, Leo. A million times no.
It's a software company.
You know, remember we talked about this. There were 40 people supposedly considered at one point, and now, I would think they're down to the last few, and Kevin Turner.
You know what? They've picked the guy.
I think they're very close to.
I'm dying
to hear the behind the scenes story on this, though.
The Ballmer interviews are the signal that it's the beginning of the end.
I want to know is how many people said no.
Right. Paul Maritz said he said no. He actually
so
said.
So you say he was asked.
He said,
Just asked to be a candidate? Or
he just said, I was part of the considered pool at the beginning, and I took myself out early on because I am too old, and he's 58.
Oh, wow. But didn't Steve Ballmer say it's time for a younger man?
They all are hinting it's time for somebody younger. 58's
not that old.
Steve Ballmer's
a 57-year-old, I'd agree with you, Paul.
No, seriously. I think someone in their 50s is pretty young for a CEO.
For a CEO, that's
the size of Microsoft.
So, yeah, that was the other rumor. And then Hal Berenson, who we've talked about on Windows Weekly before, who used to work at Microsoft, he was a distinguished engineer there. He wrote a very intriguing blog post today on his site saying, you know what I think is going to happen? I think Bill Gates is going to step down as chairman within a year, and Alan Mulally is going to become the chairman of the board.
That I could see. That's fine.
Okay. So this sounds interesting, but what's this based on? This is just
he's admitting this is kind of me thinking things through. Yeah. He's not pretending he has sources. He's just saying, this is what I think is going to happen based on my experience with Microsoft and people who I've talked to in the past.
That makes sense. But the Microsoft board is not.
I think a diminished role for Gates is key to this company moving on, because he is the white elephant, you know.
And Bill wants to, I'm sure.
You think?
Oh, he wants to release mosquitoes and, you know, give people shots. He's got.
It's going to be tough, though, right? I mean, even though he's not involved in the day-to-day.
But this is part of a phasing out. You go step by step, and he's got, you know, I think he's got to want to move on. He's 85 years old. I think it's time.
Actually, he's got to be 58.
He's my age. Yeah, he's 58. Yeah. Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and me, we were of a generation.
Yeah. Too young to be hippies.
Exactly. Wasn't that Malcolm Gladwell's contention in his last book that in fact there was this generation that had missed the 60s.
They resented it. And Steve Jobs used to claim that the hippie thing didn't really happen until, you know, the 60s didn't happen until the 70s, which is a cute way of saying, I wish I was born 10 years earlier because actually I missed it.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm acutely aware of being too young.
Yeah.
I was 12 years old during the Summer of Love. I wasn't getting any.
think I was a product of the summer of love, but it turned into the winter of discontent.
Now is the winter of my discontent. Gelsinger is definitely a dark horse.
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting. He was a long time Intel, right? And that's
yeah. But you know, CEO is a management job. Do you think the fact that Steve Ballmer pointed out that he was not technical is a little hint about what might be next? Huh. Do you think he's telling you, Mary Jo Foley, look, it doesn't have to be.
He might just be acknowledging what people have been saying, right?
Right. Might not have been about that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but there's a big debate on, do they need somebody at Microsoft who's more a tech visionary, more a manager? It's hard to find somebody who's both, right? I think it's very hard.
I just watched a TechCrunch interview with Marissa Mayer, right, the CEO of Yahoo. Mm-hmm. And I came away with two things from this. Well, three things. The guy from TechCrunch was a jerk. I have no idea why Yahoo exists.
Yeah.
But she said something very interesting. They were talking about decisions and everything. And she said, you know, it's funny. As a CEO, you don't actually come into work and make many decisions every day. People sort of imagine that you're making big decisions every day. You know, right. And the truth is you put these teams in place and they make decisions. And you make a limited number of decisions, but they're very profound decisions. You know,
right.
When the CEO does make a decision, it's very profound.
Really, the biggest decisions are putting the teams together. Right.
Yeah.
If you're a good CEO, you delegate and you empower your team.
And I think that was the outsider thing, you know, that someone could come in and look at the products and projects that Microsoft was working on, look at the teams that were in place and objectively say, OK, this makes sense. This makes sense. This one, I don't know. You know, and I really do feel like Microsoft does need that. And part of, you know, with the Bill Gates thing, you know, part of the problem with Bill Gates sticking around is chairman of the board and having a say in future direction and strategy and so forth is that can't really happen unless he's gone or unless he gives that new CEO the absolute responsibility to make the right decisions on his own. And so I think that's the type of thing Microsoft needs. It's not about turning the company around. It's just, you know, you're setting down a strategy that's going to last for many years. It's got to make sense, you know, for the company.
Well, goodness knows, the main reason you see so much ink about this is it's one of Pundit's favorite jobs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Is looking at stuff like this. And
yep.
It's got to be.
The more vague it is, the better, right. You know?
It's got to be a little frustrating for those inside who can't say anything.
Yeah.
I think that was a great
insight. If they want to say something, they have a willing couple of ears. You know, just throwing that one out there.
Just take your shoes off, sit back, and talk to Mary Jo. She's a good listener. I think the insight that you had, Mary Jo, which is that the view from inside is very different than the view from outside,
definitely,
is really important for us all to remember. You know, the best we can do is see things through a glass darkly. I mean, we're not privy to any of the real facts.
Yeah, it's so easy to judge, you know.
Yeah.
I was just joking about that with my wife. My wife made some comments about people in the snow and how they can't handle it. And then she went outside and had an awful time outside. And I said, you know, it's the funny thing when you judge people, the comeuppance that is almost always the end result, you know, it's predictable.
Yeah, we're all screw ups. Let's face it. more on the road to Windows threshold. This is Mary Jo Foley's show today, Paul. You didn't even really need to show
up. I expected to be here after this was over.
Okay.
This is actually, Paul should take the lead on this because we talked about threshold last time, but Paul found out a new interesting tidbit.
Paul was in on it there. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, by the way, Paul, we started on time, but we had some technical difficulties that pushed it off.
Skype.
Damn you, Skype.
I guess I have like three tidbits, I guess. You know, one is I've heard from sources that the start menu is making a comeback in the next version.
No.
I know. And actually, Mary Jo should expand on that in a bit. Because
that's not even possible.
That's what they said about the start button. Why not, Leo? I will say this, because people hear this stuff and some of the other things we'll discuss, and they say, oh, there's Microsoft taking a step back again. They can never just go forward and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Okay. But the thing is, the central problem to, well, actually, there are many problems to Windows 8, but let's just say one of the central problems to Windows 8 was that it was the first version of Windows that offered a new user interface, but no way to go back optionally to the old one.
Right.
If you go to every previous version of Windows, as they added the start screen, In Windows 95, you could use Program Manager if you wanted. Right. If they when they changed the start menu in Windows XP, you could go back to the classic start menu in, from Windows 2000. They always offered that as a way to, you know, get people to move forward, because job one is to get people to move forward.
Right.
When they can't move, when they can't, they stick on what they have. So shocker, you know, when Windows 8 was my way or the highway, a lot of people said, well, you know, Windows XP is still looking pretty good, or Windows 7 is still looking pretty good. And they decided to stand still. And you can see that in the sales and all that kind of stuff. So start menu, yes, a lot of people are going to now say that this is a problem. Ironically, some of those same people will be the ones that were complaining that it wasn't there in Windows 8. So I always enjoy that kind of thing. But
me.
Well, you know, this is the online world
but,
we live
but
in.
But they made us get used to it now. You know,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay. I don't want to praise Microsoft for doing the right thing belatedly,
right.
Per se, right?
Right.
Also, I don't want to praise them for fixing a problem of their own making. It's but let's just say doing the right thing for customers is always the right thing. So I think it's okay.
Okay. I agree.
And Mary Jo, why don't you, because you have more information about the start menu.
Yep. So after Paul reported that there might be a start menu, I went back and asked a couple of my sources, you know, is this possible? Is this happening? And I hear, yes, it not only is possible, but it almost certainly is happening.
Wow.
It's not maybe, it's a yes, it's coming. And the question that my sources don't seem to know the answer to is exactly when is it coming? Because we've been assuming it wouldn't come until Threshold, which is supposedly spring 2015. But my sources are saying there's a chance it could come with Windows 8.1 Update 1, which is spring 2014.
That would make more sense, frankly.
I think so.
If you're going to bring it back, don't waste time.
Yeah. Right. And supposedly inside Microsoft, they're calling it the mini start menu. So that to me means it's not going to be the same start menu we all know.
Mini start menu, you complete me.
It's like the start menu, but it's mini.
It's mini size.
Does that mean in size? Does that mean in spirit?
I think in size. I think the idea is it's not going to cover up all of your screen, right? It's going to be fairly small. And the question is, what do you put on this start menu, right? Because in Windows 8, the start screen is the start menu.
It better
menu.
Be shut down, Mary Jo, or there's going to be hell to pay.
I think so. They should definitely have shut down. A lot of people say, of course, it's going to have Bing, you would think. But the other question is, does it have things like, you know, utilities, programs, all programs? Does it have some way to more easily go to all programs? Or is it just kind of like what the start button is in Windows 8 now, right? Which is more of a kind of a design thing, something to let people who are very used to Windows be able to grasp Windows 8 more quickly. Because right now, even though Windows 8.1 does a lot to fix how things look and how they work, a lot of people are still confused about Windows 8.
Yeah.
So the idea is it gives a nod to the business users, to people using mice and keyboards specifically to help them make the transition to Windows 8. Because the worst thing, if you're Microsoft, is the one thing you don't want to happen is Windows 7 users and Windows XP users look at Windows 8 and they say, nope, can't figure that out, not doing it. Staying with my OS or going to Apple. Or going to Linux,
well,
right?
Staying with whatever they're using is dangerous, because what's really going to happen is over time they're going to discover I can do most of what I need to do on a tablet or my phone even, and this kind of 10-year-old PC is fine for the, you know, I need to print or whatever it is. That's a really dangerous situation.
Yeah.
And moving forward is always key. You also wrote something about the different product SKUs, potentially for Threshold, right? And we didn't talk about that last week, did we?
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about that.
So do you think you should discuss that, but also whether you think this start menu thing will be tied in any way to one or more of those SKUs, you know, because some will be business oriented.
Yeah. Paul and I, by the way, because I've gotten this question a couple times, why didn't you guys tell us all this last week on Windows Weekly? We're always finding out new stuff about these things, right? Like, we are telling you everything we know as of today, and we're going to probably find out some more stuff next week, too. So don't think we're holding back on you is the first thing I want to say. I learned after
last week. In some ways, I am holding back on people, but...
I won't speak
for
you.
Someday Paul will let go, and you'll all regret it. I'm just saying.
I won't speak for you, right. but what I found out after last week's show was supposedly the team already is thinking about what kind of SKUs they want to have. And when I'm using SKUs here, I mean versions that some of these versions are things users are going to see, and some are just OEM SKUs. So there's supposedly this thing called the modern consumer SKU of threshold that they're thinking about. And this is the one that would be kind of the hybrid Windows Phone, Windows RT operating system. It would actually even run on some Intel machines, perhaps. And it would probably not run Win32 apps, even on Intel. It would be more of a lockdown SKU, no desktop, or some kind of a desktop that would be very much modified in some way. Then there'd be a more traditional consumer SKU that would be more like what Windows 8 is today. So it would let you have the desktop, and it would also probably include some of these things we're talking about with the new start menu. So it would be meant to run on PCs and for people like me, basically, people who are still running Windows 7 because we feel like we're more productive with Windows 7 than we are with Windows 8 on traditional PCs. And then there'd be the enterprise SKU, which is like what they have now at Microsoft for enterprise users, volume licensees. And this one would have the full desktop, Win32 apps could run on it. And it would also run the modern apps, the Windows Store apps. And Paul had that tip about with the new desktop that Microsoft may be looking towards allowing people to float Win32 apps. Not Win32. Float modern / Windows Store apps in the desktop. So it would make it not such a jarring experience, right? Like you'd actually be in the desktop if you're an enterprise user, but you'd see both your Win32 apps and your modern apps on that desktop. So that's supposedly is what the kind of what the early thinking is right now about how they'd look at threshold and what each kind of a SKU would run on. Complicated, but we're trying to help you guys figure it out as we do.
It's like running in mud.
Fascinating.
I've always thought that if Microsoft was serious about really supporting the whole range of customers it has for Windows, that the desktop needs to continue to evolve and pick up Metro capabilities, that certain safely written desktop apps should be sold through the store or provided through the store, and that is, you know, Microsoft's form of the good housekeeping seal of approval or whatever that is, that they should support full screen apps in Win32, new APIs that would allow them to run, look like Metro apps, put up Metro-style notifications, whatever, interact with the lock screen, whatever you want to say, and have those capabilities. And that the maturation of this platform needs to involve the desktop, too, not just, you know, the Metro stuff. Because, you know, we talk about the desktop going away and everything, and I feel like we're kind of heading in that direction, obviously. But I do think that there's a transition period, and it's not gonna be as quick as Microsoft originally hoped for. As evidenced by the reaction to Windows 8. So,
and you know, when we've talked about desktop going away, I think you and I, Paul, both have been thinking about the desktop as it exists today, right, on Windows 8, sure. Which, you know, we were just saying, how can that continue to exist? Because it's such a weird experience if you're trying to get everybody to move over to Metro and developing.
It makes no sense at all on a tablet. None.
Right.
And you can see that in Windows 8.1 where they moved a lot of the control panel utilities into PC settings, which is that kind of Metro style experience. Yep. Anyone, especially now we have these mini tablets. Have you ever tried to tap a little menu item with your finger? I don't care how small your fingers are. This is, it's just not touch friendly. And it's just never going to be touch friendly.
No. No.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's another good question, though. What about, you know, I wonder about this new start menu. Like, how touch friendly is that going to be? And how, right. Also, how does it fit in with tiles, right? Like, is it going to be something to do with tiles?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I can only speculate at this point, but I would assume that it's going to be geared toward the desktop user and that it's going to be geared toward mouse and keyboard. Yeah. That's how I sort of view that.
I think so.
I also think that this combined Windows Phone RT SKU that we've been talking about and that you mentioned is one of those three SKUs for threshold makes plenty of sense not to have a desktop. Or have the desktop be optional, especially since it's not going to run desktop apps, even in x86 form. Get rid of the desktop. There's your there's your desktop disappearing. And so I think what Microsoft wants and what the user base is willing to accept are a little far apart right now. And maybe that will change over time. But pretty clearly, I think moving down a path where they support both sides of the equation is what makes the most sense.
Wither RT in all this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the idea is Windows RT and the Windows Phone OS become one thing somehow. And that this single SKU can work on devices that currently are running Windows RT, like certain tablets, like the Surface.
I always Surface think of the do two turkeys make an eagle comment. I don't remember who said that first.
But this combined OS also would run on Windows Phone. And, you know, we've been seeing tips today, or not tips. I shouldn't even dignify them as calling them tips. But Elder, what's his last name? Elder Mertzen, right?
The
ex-Nokia guy. He's going around again saying that Microsoft's going to totally dump Metro and make a whole new UI for the next version of Windows Phone. And my guess is what he's hearing about is this thing. And I don't think it's going to be a whole brand new UI. I can't say that for sure, but I think what he's hearing about or is trying to allude to is this combined SKU. And to me, the big question is how, you know, it's going to have to run existing apps, but how? And we talked
about
that.
I'm not saying that's not happening, but I've never heard that. And I have to think if something that radical was happening, I would. And obviously, Hopefully. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if it happens, I mean, you know, we can write about it or whatever. But I have not.
No, I think it's just there's, you know, there's a lot of things floating around right now as like just because there's a lot of flux in what's going on in the Windows team now that it's one big OS team. And we'll see how this shakes out.
I like what I'm hearing, though. Right. I mean, all this stuff sounds good. This is so less radical than what Windows 8 was and just seems like smart and sounds like that thing I've been talking about. Have someone come in from the outside, in this case, not from the outside, but look objectively at what they were doing and say, no, you know, this radical path that you went down has alienated customers. It's crazy. Yeah. So smart.
Or what else can they do?
Sure. Well, they could keep doing it.
That's kind of been the philosophy now. Is damn the customers, full speed ahead.
It's not working out. You know.
I just always brooding for the customers. So Windows RT merges with Windows Phone. It's kind of the. But this is their tablet OS. This is. I mean, they.
Yeah.
But remember, a lot of us. We're saying way back in the day, why didn't they make Windows Phone OS the tablet OS, right? Like, why?
Because
they
don't have a desktop.
They don't need it for
example. On Windows RT, you don't have the desktop now, right?
Well, you do, but I'm sure that's what the
But Office is heading to Metro. That's another thing that's going to change.
That'll change it. Right. So then we can be all Metro.
Yep.
Exactly.
Which we all agree is the best way to do it. Obviously.
Yeah. When you have Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote all in. Right. Touch first Metro style versions, then you can say to people who are using the tablets, you know what? You don't really need the desktop now.
Right. And so it's a timing thing. And I bet you anything, this is exactly the conversation that they had. They probably did want to do all Metro, but felt like to make the RT succeed,
I'm sure there were people within the Windows Phone org who approached Windows or whoever and said, look, we've got this thing. This would make sense on bigger devices. Let's make a tablet OS out of this. And they were treated like children. And, yeah, you're so cute. Get out of here. We know what we're doing, you know. It's too bad because now those groups are kind of together and as they should be. And so I think that the coexistence and commingling or whatever we're seeing here is the right approach.
Something buried, though, in this story you wrote for Windows IT Pro, Paul, is the notion that perhaps they would give away these.
See, I throw that one out there like a little. Like a little ticking time bomb.
Well, Android's free, right? And the key to Android's success, although it's also the key to its challenges, is the fact that it's available freely. Yeah. You get more penetration that way, but you also get fragmentation. You get weird versions. You get a lot of strange stuff going on. Microsoft could enforce.
But a logical differentiation occurs here. You've got the Windows without the desktop, what is now RT or phone. And then you've got Windows with the desktop. And Microsoft could continue to charge and maybe not charge for the non-desktop version as a way to get that thing out in the world. Because remember,
I'd buy it if that's the right price for me.
Well, I don't expect it to be available to end users, right? Just my opinion.
No, they do it to OEMs. They say
you get it only. And if you think about it, this is the way you acquire RT or phone today. You can't go buy the software. You have to get the device, and then you get the updates from there. I think that makes plenty of sense. And the original strategy with Windows 8, the one that we've just been criticizing for the past 30 minutes or whatever, was how do you get this new thing out in front of hundreds of millions of people? Well, you kind of jam it down their throats by making it part of Windows, right? Well, there's another way to do it, and that's to give it away for free. It's worked really well for Android. It's the reason that iWork or whatever is free to iOS users. Right. I mean, if you want people to adopt this stuff, give it away. It's why Internet Explorer became free.
Sometimes free stuff, though. I mean, I go to the bargain bin, and it's not necessarily a book I want to read.
Well, right, but it's not free in isolation. I mean, a customer who acquires a free version of Windows, whatever, as part of a device, is now in the ecosystem. And maybe they're paying Microsoft for services. They're paying for extra storage in SkyDrive and Xbox Music Pass, whatever it might be, Office 365, Home Premium. You want to get people in your platform, and then you can get money from them in other ways. And everyone, there are different strategies. Apple charges people for hardware. Microsoft can't do that, but their PC maker partners can. Microsoft can hit them up on services or whatever. So, I don't know. The world's changing. I mean, Microsoft needs to address this, or Windows is going to become a minority player very quickly.
Right. Mm-hmm. Of course, knowing Microsoft, they'd make it free, but they'd keep Windows Genuine Advantage on it.
Oh, yeah.
Just to make sure nobody was stealing the free stuff.
Sure, sure.
All right. Let's take a break. Come back with more. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, Windows Weekly. Drink, everybody. Enjoy. A little later on, Carrie Underwood with a live production of The Sound of Music. Just stay tuned. We'll have more with Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. More about Steve Ballmer. More Microsoft coming up in just a bit. I want to interrupt a little bit, though, briefly, to talk about IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV, kind of a neat story. These guys, Tim and Don, came up to visit us a few months ago and told me quite a great story. They said, we were fans of the screensavers, watched it for years. We've been teaching certification programs for almost that long. And we came to NAB to look at equipment because we were thinking about maybe doing some video, and they went to that panel I did at NAB, the Broadcast Minds thing that we did for TriCaster, and they got inspired. They said, we could do that. We could do TWIT for IT professionals, for certifications, for training, and that's how IT Pro TV came about. Learn without even knowing it. What a great idea. Basically, it's the same as what we do, except it's designed to help you get your certs. They've got live programming. You have chat rooms so you can respond. You can ask questions. They're getting ready for a show right now. They do the same thing behind the scenes and all of that. I love it. They're looking at the lights. They're probably having internet issues just as we are. But doesn't that look like the screensaver set? That's one of the things I love. They really took the time to make a beautiful set. But here's the deal. At IT Pro TV, you're going to be learning some really valuable skills. The CompTIA certs. A+, Net Plus coming. Security Plus is there now. MCSA for Microsoft. Cisco's CCNT, CCNA coming. If you click this, you'll see what all these episodes are. In fact, I invite you to visit right now, itpro.tv, because we've got a special deal for you. Here are the exam objectives for the A+ cert, right? Well, every one of these has a lesson. So even if you don't want to watch all the time or you don't want to watch all of them, you say, I need a little bit of help with compare and contrast common security threats, part two. You click the link, you watch the video, you learn. It's easy, it's fun, and right now it's 50% off. Here's how you do it. Visit itpro.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. Use our offer code WW50. Now, normally this is still very affordable, $57 a month, or $570 for an entire year. So it couldn't be more affordable. You get the videos, you can watch live, and it's unlimited, right? But with a 50% off, we're now talking $28.50 a month. I mean, wow. That's less than one prep book or $285 for the entire year. You will learn without even knowing IT. Even if you don't want to get a cert, I think this would be a great thing to watch. Don't give up on a twit, please. But I think a great way to learn with two really great guys. Actually, it's a big team. If you see who they are, there's just a great team of trainers and professionals. Visit it right now, itpro.tv/ww. You could find out more about what they're up to. And then if you decide this is right for you, I want to get that cert, I want to improve my skills or get a better job, just use the offer code WW50. itpro.tv/ww. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. So XP in March, I read an interesting story about buying Windows 7 the other day. No more retail boxes, according to Microsoft. And what, in about a year, no more Windows 7 at all?
Maybe.
See, I would, yeah, I mean, this is what, right. This has got to be a tough decision for Microsoft, because on the one hand, people are still buying it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It literally is. It's funny. Go ahead, Mary Jo. I'm sorry. It's just funny how this is so imprecise.
Yeah.
I know. So here's what happened, Leo. This is kind of funny. So when they posted that date about retail boxes no longer for sale as of October 30th, 2013.
Yeah.
Right. They also posted another date which said PC makers no longer allowed to sell Windows 7 preloaded on new machines October 30th, 2014.
Right.
So a year later.
Right.
Then they came back and said, you know what? That was a mistake.
What?
We didn't mean to post that date. We actually are calling that date TBD, to be determined, and we're not going to say when that date is.
Oh.
Now, so there's one camp that says, yeah, it's still going to be that date. They just didn't want to tell people that now so they wouldn't set off a panic. And then there's other people who say, you know what? If people aren't buying Windows 8 PCs and businesses, we're going to push that date out further.
Why would they want to box themselves in?
Right.
They may still do it October 31st, 2014, but
they might.
Why commit to it?
Right.
There's no point.
Right. No.
We'll see how things go.
Let's
see how things go.
Well, the other thing is, what if this threshold release is available plus or minus a few months of that time, and that is a more viable upgrade for desktop PC users, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the Windows 8 has got this, I don't want to say stink about it, but there's a perception out there among traditional, this thing just doesn't work.
Right.
And I think Mary Jo mentioned earlier, people just have a hard time with it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So what if 8.2 or Threshold or whatever it is, wherever this stuff happens, what if it becomes the next Windows 7 for those types of computers?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That might help get rid of Windows 7 and avoid that XP problem that we have now.
The real date everybody needs to know, these dates are just like, okay, yeah, that PC date's interesting, but the end of support date for Windows 7 right now, for mainstream, meaning free support. If you have Windows 7 with Service Pack 1, it's January 13th, 2015. So you still have a couple years before Microsoft makes that paid support. But again, maybe they're going to extend that date. They did that with XP, and it kept XP around for a really long time. So I don't think they'd want to do that, but I think depending, again, on the uptake of Windows 8, we'll see if they extend that 2015 end of support date or not.
And let me ask the logical follow-up question, because you mentioned Service Pack 1. When is Service Pack 2 coming, would you say?
Never. What would you say?
That is
what
correct.
What would you say?
You are correct, sir. Never. Yeah,
it's so strange. It's so strange.
Yep.
Can you imagine if you installed Windows 7 today, there must be 977 updates that have to be installed from Windows Update as soon as you install the OS. It's got to be horrific.
Yeah.
There's no roll-up or anything, huh?
They've done a couple of roll-up type updates. Obviously, this is Service Pack 1, but that was years ago.
I love Windows 7. I'm sorry. I still love it.
I know, but I mean, just the process of getting it installed on a box and fully updated, it's the better part of a day right there.
Yeah.
Right. But as we know, most people buy the operating system with a computer. I presume
don't
the OEMs
I wouldn't assume that.
Oh.
No, I wouldn't. Not with Windows 7.
Right.
So maybe I should try that. I haven't installed Windows 7 in a while. This is a kind of blast from the past. I'll find a Saturday. I got nothing going on at all. Just install updates all day. It'll be fun. Do I want Silverlight? I think so.
Okay, some news tidbits. We can run through these. Xbox One versus PlayStation 4, as you said last week, because Microsoft's a week later in its release date, they don't have the same time frame. Last week, Sony said, we've sold 2 million copies. You presumed that that's probably a number very similar for Xbox One. In fact, it was.
Yeah, these numbers are, it's interesting because they're not directly comparable, but they roughly work out like so. I think what Sony said was we sold 2.1 million in the first 2 weeks of availability, I think it was.
Yeah, that's right.
2 weeks. As of, December 1st. Microsoft yesterday said they sold over 2 million units, and it was over, I want to say, 17 days, so slightly different time frame. Sony has their box in far more markets. I forget the exact numbers, but it's roughly 32 versus 13 or something like that. And so when you compare that to the fact that the Xbox One is $100 more expensive, I actually think this is kind of a win for Microsoft. I mean, a lot of people just assumed that the PlayStation 4 was going to blow it out of the water. And I actually think, looking at this, that the sales are, if not absolutely comparable, they might even be in Microsoft's favor. So, again, 2 weeks or whatever this is, 3 weeks in, whatever, wherever we are, a month in, whatever. This is not how this story gets told. I mean, it's going to be next year or a year later. You know, we have to see how these things
That's the real point. This is meaningless.
Yeah. But it's fun.
This is partisans on both sides trying to say, hey, ours is best. We're number one. And none of this matters. It matters in a year.
Well,
when
except for one thing. But the one perception part here that is important is that because of all that pre-release bad news that Sony did a masterful job of getting going on the Xbox One, a lot of people assumed that PS4 was going to blow it out of the water this holiday season. And honestly, if they could come out with comparable numbers at the conclusion of the holiday season, that's a big win for Microsoft because that was not the conventional wisdom. And so it's important on that note. No?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I really think. I mean, you know what's going to tell me which one's the best in when the next generation of games really start appearing?
Yeah. Have you seen some of this stuff? Have you seen the Tom Clancy demo?
No.
I can't remember the name of the game. There is an amazing video on YouTube of a next gen. It's called. Let me find it. It's called. Snowdrop is the name of the engine. And so if you look up Tom Clancy's The Division on YouTube, there's a Snowdrop next-gen engine demo where they go through the level and they show how, you know, lighting conditions and temperature changes actually change the look of this world. And it is beautiful. It is really beautiful. And so if you're playing Battlefield 4 today, which looks great, or Call of Duty Ghost, which looks fine, you're basically getting a fairly comparable experience that you would get on a previous gen console, but that's this game and, you know, obviously Titanfall and things like that, I do agree, is going to make a big, big difference.
Yeah, Watch Dogs. I'm waiting for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's not just exclusives. Here's the...
this is amazing. If you haven't seen this, this is really impressive.
Yeah. It's kind of dark, unfortunately, so I don't know if people are going to really be able to see this on the stream. In fact, is it supposed to be this dark? Is this?
No, I don't know why that's so dark. But they do this thing where the sun kind of passes overhead and affects the look of things. The temperature changes and things ice over. The environment is very, very dynamic.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I can't quite call it photo quality, but it's very realistic.
There's a light falling from the ceiling, and it shows how it swings back and forth. We've got to have sun flare. Without sun flare, there's nothing. Procedural destruction, they're calling this, as he blows up a NYPD
Yeah, and this
car.
Is the big thing. So Call of Duty Ghost has a little bit of, I guess I'd call it like interactive environments where you can cause things like doors to open and close and trees to fall over and stuff. And Battlefield 4 has far more of that kind of stuff where you can destroy entire environments. It's all very interesting. But this kind of thing, it looks like what I would call maybe like a truly dynamic environment where you can introduce such things as light and temperature, weather.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting.
So this is, I bet this will be on PS4 and Xbox One, right?
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not Xbox One exclusive.
Yeah, right? And that's the point. Both of these machines are roughly equally capable.
Yep.
And it's all up to the developers. It's all up to the engines. Nobody's going to make something that is light years ahead on either platform. I don't know. I think the world of exclusives has narrowed. I don't think that's much.
I hope
anymore.
So. I actually think that ruins video gaming. I understand why it exists, but too many times, you know, especially, you know, it's like if you could go back to the Super Mario stuff on Nintendo or Sonic on the Sega stuff. I mean, it just, that kind of lock-in doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think roughly, these are going to be roughly equal. To me, the thing that puts the Xbox over the top is the Kinect, is, you know, the $100 extra thing. Is the media capabilities.
I have not looked at the gesture stuff too much yet. I still kind of hate that, and I've been putting it off.
I've never liked it.
But the ability to talk to the machine, it's very useful. I actually really like it. And there are dumb little things like the Xbox record that thing, which I think is so awesome.
I watched you pick up some satellite thing. I don't know what the hell that was. And just,
is it the chem strike?
Yeah.
That one was awesome, and it destroyed the entire level.
And then you aim, and you go...
Yeah, and the whole level destroyed, and I won the game.
And you won the game, and then...
Normally, I'm like, sitting here like...
Xbox, record this.
You know, there's no one like...
Did you see that? So I saw it, Paul, and it's pretty impressive that you could save that 30 seconds of previous experience.
Love that.
Yeah.
I just love that.
And I think for a guy like me, I'm an older man, I get up and pee more often than probably you young people. The fact that I can, in the middle of the game, say Xbox pause and get up is amazing.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah, no, I said this about the original Kinect. You know, the voice stuff was always the best part of it.
Right.
And it is exponentially better.
Have you played any Kinect games? I mean, I've played
that's what I mean. I'm kind of putting this off. Like, I just got an update.
Thing. It's fun.
I told people, I saw this message on Ghosts one time that said, you can talk to ghosts. And I didn't remember what it said. And I say ghosts and nothing ever happened. And so today there was an update to Ghosts. And now they have a little helper menu for this, and it exists. You can actually say ghosts, which for me is a kind of a hard word to spit out for some reason.
Ghosts.
You know what I mean? It's not like Xbox.
Yeah.
But I can't get this to work. And so now I'm talking to my game, and it's not doing anything, and it's just a bad experience. But the overall Xbox, I mean, it's cool.
I like it. So I've used the Rivals, the sport thing. It's not out yet, but they have a beta or pre-release or teaser or something, and it's, you know, it's not like the old Kinect where I had to move furniture and get 20 feet back. I could be right up
3 feet away from this thing. Yeah. It's working fine.
So it is a much improved device. The Array microphone works surprisingly well. Mine's right above my center channel speaker, and it still seems to understand me.
Well, you do that test, and it, because it has an Array microphone, and it tests where the sounds are coming from, and it kind of compensates.
I think the games are going to be even out. And I think it's going to ultimately be...
I'll do that. Well, I don't know what it's called, but the Xbox Fitness or whatever, or Kinect Fitness, whatever that is. I'll try that.
Jillian Michaels keeps yelling
at me. I'll let her kick my ass for a little while. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
But no, those are cool, actually. That's really an interesting thing because it sees you.
But now see, it sees your heart rate.
Now.
It's going to know I'm dogging it.
It knows when you're dogging it. She yells at you more. No, it works.
Yeah, it's going to be right like that fat show she's on.
It works. You are the biggest loser.
Right, I am. She's going to be like, move it, fatty. Let's go.
I used to work with her.
It's not what I want.
I used to have the show right after hers on KFI in Los Angeles. She's a very nice.
Really?
Yeah, she's actually very nice. Really into technology. More security for Microsoft accounts.
Yeah, I don't even remember what this is. It's so un-Xbox related.
The switch to Outlook.com is now easier for Gmail users.
There's some cool stuff in there. I haven't checked today, but they've added three new features, all of which are kind of cool. So one is a recent activity thing. We can just look and see what you've done.
That's very valuable. I use it on Gmail all the time to see who's been accessing my account.
Right. So there you go. That's cool. Recovery codes are for people who are using two-step authentication, which, by the way, at this point in time, everyone should be using this feature.
It works very nicely.
This lets you recover from it if your two steps both fail. There's a recovery mode now. And you can also now control the security notifications you get. You can't actually turn them all off. So if someone seizes your account, Microsoft's going to, or tries to, they're going to notify you of that. You can't actually turn that one off. But you can now tell them how you want to be notified and how different notifications can hit you and so forth. And so you could literally get a phone call, you know, or I guess it's a text message from Microsoft, you know, when you're out, and it's like, hey, someone's trying to hack into your account, and you can take that time and maybe change the password.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's some neat stuff. It's not, again, not a huge, huge thing like two-step authentication, but, you know, just kind of that ongoing process of keeping those accounts safer.
The switch to Outlook is easier for Gmail users. Another Paul.
Yeah, Farad. You know, I was going to say, you know, in keeping with the Scroogle thing, every time someone sees something they don't like or something that doesn't address their concern, they always say, well, yeah, they could do this, but how come they don't fix this? You know, so it's like Scroogle, like, why aren't they spending their money making it easier, you know, doing something proactive, like, help, you know, help people to convert, you know, that kind of thing. I don't think that the Scroogle campaign and the people working on Outlook.com have anything in common, so no, I don't really think those things make sense. But they have released this wizard now that's part of Outlook.com that simplifies something you could do before, just kind of more manually, and that is importing your contacts from Gmail, setting up Outlook to send mail as if you were from Gmail, right? And then they can't do this for you automatically, but they can send you instructions about how to go into Gmail and have it automatically forward all of your mail to Outlook.com. And so to the outside world, you're still using Gmail. No one has to change their address in their address book or whatever. And but you can use Outlook.com and you don't get crazy ads over on the side that say stuff that's related to the email you're reading.
That way both Microsoft and Google can read your email.
Yeah. Well, actually, possibly. I mean, the difference is that I don't know how they read the, you know, when they read the mail. But the craziness of the Gmail email reading is that they read it to provide you with ads.
And so that's the only difference, Paul, is why they read it.
It's a big difference, Leo. but. Yes, the only reason is right. The only reason they do it is to do evil. I get it. It's one difference. But
do evil? How evil? Wait a minute. Is it really evil to say it's take an ad and make it be something you're interested in?
Here's the problem with it. You can't buy your way out of it, right? It's
no. You can't
pay them to not read your email,
and then you'll have random ads. Well, right. No, you can't pay Microsoft not to read your email. They read your email for spam purposes. If what you're worried about is some company reading your email, both companies do it.
Google has this weird way of stepping over what I think of as like the creepy line, you know? And it's like those, you know, there are many examples of this online where here's a Gmail email with the contents of it and they show you what the ads are and how often inappropriate they are and strange. And I think this kind of thing just rubs people the wrong way. And, you know, whatever. I'm not going to debate. Well, we can't debate it, but it does. I don't care if people want to switch from Gmail to Outlook. All I'm saying is if you do,
it's easier.
It's easier now. Yeah. And so, again, this was a manual process before. Now it's automated. It's good because this is the type of stuff a year ago I was writing up as tips because there are people that want to do this, but it's, you know, it's a convoluted process. The unfortunate part of this is it's not everything. And so, for example, they don't have a wizard to convert your Google Calendar to Outlook's calendar. I've had some people write me and say, well, what about I have a custom domain that I'm hosting on Gmail. I mean, I want to move that over to Outlook.com. How do you do that? And you can do that. And like Google, Microsoft has a free service. I think it's still called Windows Live Domains or whatever they call it. But the problem is, you know, it's like black magic. You know, like getting all of the registrar information correct is hard. And they only have information about a handful of registrars. And so if yours is not in there, like mine isn't, I use Namecheap, for example, you really got to, you got to be kind of an expert in this stuff to make it work. And so that's something I'll consider writing up for the future. But it would be, if not impossible, extremely painful to manually figure out how to do that for every possible registrar you might be using. So anyway, They've hit the big one at the least.
Hey, would we know if they updated Xbox One? Would there be any way to know that? Would it give you a?
Yeah,
and it's actually always on, right?
Yeah, but it does. So, you know, again, we've only had a couple of these major updates, and I've had a couple of game updates too, and so you can kind of see how it happens.
You see, yeah.
Well, you see the system update too. So there was one on day one, and because it was day one, and I was so excited, I didn't have it attached to a
screenshot. Well, it just says I have a. In fact, before you can even run it, it said I have a 500 megabyte update.
Right. So yesterday, he did something very similar, and they had their second update, right, or their first post-launch update. It happened to happen on Patch Tuesday, which I find very interesting because that's when they surface. This thing had downloaded in the background, but it prompted me to install it.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't actually check. I don't know if it's mandatory. I know that if it wasn't, it will become mandatory over time, kind of like they do on Windows for some updates, for security updates. So if I had skipped it, I don't actually know. But if it wasn't mandatory, it probably would have worked normally. But when you install it, if you don't install it when it's mandatory, you can't get on Xbox Live, right? You have to install some of these things. So. Right. That's something I'll be watching over time. It's only the second one, but
we're too engrossed in our Xbox Ones to say no. We don't.
I know. We're so excited.
Please install it. Yes.
Like, oh, I should have taken a screenshot of that.
Yeah. You can tell I haven't turned
mine on.
Mary Jo,
you look like you're coming to us from like the dark.
I am. I'm hiding.
She's in the dark. The reality engine is so good.
Whenever I switch my screen to something with a dark background, because I sit really close to this big monitor, it's like
the screen is her light.
It is.
Key light.
The screen is my light.
Yeah.
So they can tell it's in the middle of the winter.
Yeah. It's already getting like darker.
It is.
It's like 4 o'clock.
Surface updates for December also.
There are a lot of them, actually.
I'm seeing a long list. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting complicated, too, because there are four machines, but two of them can have Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 on it.
Yeah.
So there are different updates for every possible combination of those things.
It's good. You know, I want them to do updates. Good, good.
I do, too. I love this.
Keep doing
updates. And this shows you, you know, when Microsoft controls it, how good this can be.
Right.
Or, as some people have said it in my comments, if this thing is such a good product, why does it need to be updated so much?
People really say that. Guys. This is software and this is hardware. This is not normal.
Yeah.
The problem is, though, I don't know if you've heard this, Paul. Some of these updates, people are saying, you know, in different platforms, like, oh, I applied this, and then I couldn't get my Wi-Fi to work. And there's just so many different possible things that are being patched on different platforms. It's hard to figure out, okay, which of these is having a problem? And is it the user problem? Is it Microsoft's problem? How do you get around it? That's the other set of problems that frequent updates bring, is sometimes they aren't so good.
Right.
Yeah, and there have been some Surface updates that have screwed up things for people. Nothing is perfect, but I spent a good part of yesterday just going through these updates on each one of these machines. You know, it is oddly convoluted when you have a bunch of them, you know, to kind of figure it out. But
this is another fun story from the Glenn Greenwald cache of documents at the NSA. This one says that the NSA considers, and of course, as they're smart, considers,
by the way,
video games a social network, and they keep track of that too.
I spend a considerable amount of my waking hours in an online world, which is like Call of Duty multiplayer.
Right.
And I can assure you that if there were terrorists plotting an attack during this game, I would never notice.
as
insane as this sounds, this might not be a bad idea.
Oh, you think it's a way of exchanging messages? Yeah.
That's what they're saying. So they're spying on these. They actually, apparently, this is from a few years ago, too, but I don't know if they're still doing this. But apparently, they're downloading surreptitiously chat transcripts. Okay, that's one thing. But they actually have, like, employees who spend time getting, characters going and going on quests in these games and stuff and interacting with people. It's kind of like the video game version of just listening to phone calls and waiting for, you know, some kind of a, you know, you're looking for those certain prompts.
Right.
Those terms or phrases that are keywords that, you know, you have to be scared of or something. It's such a weird thing, but I don't know. Maybe I kind of had fun with it when I wrote a news story about it, but it may actually make some sense.
It makes complete sense, you know. And by the way, this is the point. The NSA has the capability, so they do it.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to hear a lot of dirty language. I can tell you that.
Technical foul on you, Ahmed.
I mean, if your home life is terrible, this is like that times a million. It's everything that's wrong with your family just exploded out.
It's pretty horrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
Nokia is doing an Android phone. So we had heard rumors that Microsoft was, you know, playing with this and Nokia's playing with this. But that would make sense. Just try it, right? But apparently there's...
I don't think that's what this is. If
what
I'm
is this? Yeah, what's the story?
But I don't, Mary Jo, have you heard anything about this one? I was interested.
Only what I've read, but I haven't heard anything firsthand on it.
Yeah, so, you know, there were these rumors that Nokia had experimented with Android this past year. Yeah. And I think anyone
you know
would
what?
Hear
when
that.
When you're in college, it's normal to do a little experimentation.
Yes, that's right. Right.
Everybody
so when you're spiraling the drain, it makes sense to look, you know, to grab onto whatever you can.
Yeah.
But that's apparently not what it was, although maybe that was something else they were doing. Nokia has three main lines of phones, right? They have the Nokia branded dumb phones. They have the Lumia smartphones. But then they have these Asha entry level smartphones that run on System 40, which is like Symbian based and ancient. And they look like cool phones, and they, you know, they do what they can to kind of put some similarities there and Windows Phone and so forth. But apparently what they were doing was looking at Android as a way to replace that. Uh-huh. That maybe Android, you know, they could even run the old apps on this thing and, you know, move it forward, and Android's free, and so why not? They could fork it like Amazon does, and that makes plenty of sense. And according to the story I read, which I think was in All Things D, it was an Ina Fried story. You know, Microsoft may eat with this. Like, and that's the kind of the crazy part. Like, they may pick this up and say, yeah, this makes sense. Let's do this as a way to advance that platform. I think they should go Windows Phone personally, but it's kind of interesting that they're doing it.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, because Microsoft now, as the owner of Nokia, has a platform for mobile. And actually, I think it's fair to mention that the big success that Windows Phone has had this year has all been on the low end of the market. Why not an entry level Windows Phone? You could dumb that UI down pretty good, and you know, I don't know how Asha works. I don't know if there's an app store or how they do all that stuff, but
they would use it as the kernel for Asha, so it wouldn't even be apparently Android, really, right?
Okay, it's still. I mean, it looks bad to me if Microsoft puts out an Android OS.
Hey, at least they wouldn't have to pay patent royalties, except
to themselves. But these are very important phones. These are the inexpensive phones for developing world, and these are very important.
Yeah, they're for places that, you know, people can't afford those contracts,
All right, a break is here. We're going to come back with more Paul Thurrott. All about, the Windows Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. I just learned she actually is an employee of Ziff Davis. I didn't know that. You're a freelancer. With your own page. allaboutmicrosoft.com and Fortune and other places like that. Our show today, the show would count as...
Yes, definitely.
One of your jobs.
Yes.
Right. It's only weekly. I wish you'd take it a little more seriously.
She does. It's me that has to take it more seriously. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Audible.com, the best bookstore in the world, at least for me, because I love audiobooks. You will, too. If you just try it, you'll see why we talk about Audible a lot. 150,000 titles. The new Dean Koontz is here.
Yeah, I just noticed that.
I was watching Family Guy, and they run over.
Oh, that is the best.
Brian runs over somebody, and he goes, "Oh my God, Stephen King!" And he hops out and says, "Mr. King, are you all right?" He says, "I'm not Stephen King. I'm Dean Koontz." And he goes, "Oh, never mind." And gets
he backs over again.
Backs over him.
Yep.
Now,
beautiful.
I don't know. Is that mean? Probably.
I think that's funny. I don't know.
Anyway, if you like Dean Koontz, the new one's here. A lot of people, and I think Paul is one of them, read thrillers on Audible. And I have to say, probably not a bad choice for your first Audible, because these, of course, they're page turners. They're grippers. And you might say, a page turner in audio? Oh, yeah. Everybody who's been an Audible subscriber knows the experience of sitting in the driveway with the engine running because you got to hear what happens next, or driving around the block, going an extra half hour on the treadmill. It's good for you. It's good for you, I tell you. Audible.com.
Just
I'm going to get
that.
You. Yeah, all the time. What were you reading?
I was listening to Masters of Doom, which is that story about
its
software.
Yeah.
By the way, this week was the 20th anniversary of Doom, which is what triggered.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it came out on December 10th, I think, 1993.
Wow, that's hard to believe. Wow.
I was telling my wife this. You know, I downloaded the shareware version of that game. And then I sent a check to Mesquite Texas.
Wow.
In software, so they would send me the rest, and they did on floppy disk. That was how they distributed it back then.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, one of the books you picked. Is not actually on Audible at the moment.
What? Which one? The first one?
Yeah, I thought so. Let me look again. Maybe the link is.
Because I got that as part of their special Black Monday deal or whatever that was.
Yeah, and I think that was maybe it was a clearance because they have Jaws, but they don't have what are you calling it? The editors.
No, just.
I have Jaws on Abridged by Peter Benchley.
Yep.
That's it?
That it?
Narrated by Eric Steele. Yeah, I guess it is. So I guess the link is the link is damaged. Now, I love the movie Jaws. And
right.
And those of us who listen to Stephen King on Audible know that often the book's even better.
Right.
Is that the case here?
Yeah. And I it's funny. The reason I went to this is because I think I just recommended Logan's Run, which is another amazing one.
Oh, yeah.
The book version of Logan's Run is nothing like the movie, but it's actually shockingly different. And if you like that movie, you need to read that one, or listen to it, rather. It is crazy how different
good.
It is.
Oh, good.
This one is much more much closer to the movie. But, you know, again, in kind of the classic sense, it expands on the story. And the other thing I like about this one, and it's true of Logan's Run, too, it's short. And I'm starting to appreciate, the more I listen to audiobooks, slogging through a 25 to 45-hour book takes like a month.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I like the shorter one. This one's about 9.5 hours
perfect.
Long.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think that's about the right size. Now, if you are a glutton for punishment, I'm going to just point out, and I'm actually reading this one on the Kindle, but Catastrophe 1914 by Max Hastings, who's one of my favorite World War II historians, is about the start of World War I. This is also amazing. This one, by the way, is probably 25 hours long. It's a long book, but the 100th anniversary of the start of World War I is next year.
Ah.
So if you think, you know,
that's 2014. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one, too.
So does this talk about the Archduke Ferdinand and his carriage and the.
Yeah, and there's awesome stuff about this. How this guy was one of, I think it was 70 archdukes. Like, he was a complete non-event. And
it always baffled me that was considered the trigger for a global Armageddon. Yep.
It's insane. And I one of the ironies of his death is that he's one of the few people, like, had this happened to someone else, he probably is the one person who could have prevented the war.
Oh, God.
Which is very strange.
Typical anarchist. Typical.
Yeah.
So Catastrophe 1914 could be your book. Jaws could be your book. You've really got 150,000 to choose from. Here's the deal. If you go to audible.com/windows and sign up for that gold account, you'll get a book a month. The first month's free. Cancel anytime in the first 30 days. You pay nothing, but the book is yours to keep. You'll also get the audio digital edition of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal as part of your subscription. This is a great deal. Free for the first month. audible.com/windows. Paul and I are fanatics. Many of the Twit hosts are fanatics. We just love listening to books. And I'll tell you, if you just, for your health, if you just made it, you know, I'm going to listen to a chapter every day while I go on the treadmill or work out, you'll be amazed how easy and fast it is, or run in the snow. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time now for the tip of the week from Mr. Paul Thurrott.
I don't remember when it was, maybe about a month ago, but I had a tip about anyone being able to update their Windows Phone 8 handset to update 3 early, right before the public release, basically by pretending that you're a developer and, you know, going through this very simple process. And a lot of people had questions about that because they're worried, well, what happens when the real update comes up? Because the real update, of course, is going to have drivers from the, you know, from the hardware maker and so forth. And the word from Microsoft is that there's no worries doing this. You'll be updatable and all that kind of stuff. And this week, in fact, they released an update for the update, if you will. So if you have Update 3 installed on your phone, you will get another Windows Phone update. And I think I can speak for most Windows Phone users to tell you how exciting it is to get an update on Windows Phone. So if you did follow that earlier tip, be sure to check. You'll be prompted eventually, but you can go in to settings and down to phone update and check for that update manually as well. And then you can just install it and get back with your life.
Can I ask you a question on this one?
Yes. Paul? Although I'm probably not going to be able to answer it.
You will. So I have update 3 on my phone, on my HTC 8X, that I got through Verizon, but I didn't get it as a developer. Like, I got it pushed to me directly by them.
Oh, that's
already
interesting.
So
it shouldn't matter how you
get
got
that
it.
Update. I didn't get this new update, though.
You didn't. Okay, so one thing you could do is just follow the instructions for, you know, developer unlocking your phone, and maybe that's what triggers it. It's actually super easy now because you can, all you need to do is...
I wondered if it was just an update if you're running the developer version, you know?
I can't believe it's that nuanced. I mean, it's possible that it's going out over a period of time, because I read about it before I got it. Mm-hmm. And so I guess if a couple of more days go by and you don't get it, you know, maybe you can just develop and lock it and see if that does it. Yeah.
Okay.
And
you said how easy it was to develop or unlock it?
Well, you know, so prior to about a month ago, you'd have to, you know, join the developer program, which at a time was $99, and, you know, go through Visual. There's a Visual Studio tool that lets you develop and lock the phone. But now all you need to do is go to that free web-based tool they have. I think it's at apps.windowsphone.com, and just sign in. You know,
that's nice.
And then you're all set.
Awesome.
It's not as hard as it used to be.
Neither is life.
Now life is
harder.
It's not getting easier, Leo.
Life is harder.
Sad truth.
But making a developer switch is easy. Your software pick of the week?
Yeah, this is kind of a goofy one. I'm always happy to see Windows Phone get stuff on a prompt schedule. But there's a new Angry Birds game out called Angry Birds Go. It's available on Windows Phone 8. And the good news is that it's free. I believe that there are in-app purchases. It's also completely different from the previous Angry Birds game. So if you've been playing through the series, you know, Rio and Space, Star Wars and so forth, you know that it's all about physics and mechanics and so forth. This game is quite different, so that's good. The bad news is, at least for now, the Windows 8 version requires a phone with a gigabyte of RAM, which stupidly excludes the very most popular Windows Phone handset, which is the Lumia 520, which only has 512 megabytes of RAM, not gigabytes, as I wrote there. So I do expect, like other games, for this thing to be adapted down to 512. So if you do have a 520 or some other low memory device, I suspect you'll be good to go soon. But it is free. So if you do have a high-end handset, you can get it now.
Awesome. And our enterprise pick of the week comes, of course, from Mary Jo Foley. I don't think it's Angry Birds this week.
It's not this week. Sorry.
No, sorry.
Enterprise
Angry
pick
CIOs.
Is
it's going to be very exciting.
Hadoop.
Angry Hadoop. Ooh.
No, it's a Windows to Go is my enterprise pick of the week. And the reason I'm talking about it this week is if you go to the Microsoft Springboard Series blog, which is where they blog about a lot of different enterprise topics, they talked about what's different with Windows to Go with Windows 8.1 compared to Windows 8. So if you need a refresher on what is Windows to Go, it's basically the enterprise version of Windows 8 that is deployed on a certified Windows to Go drive. So it means you can take the thumb drive with you and you'll have all your settings and you'll have Windows on there. You'll even have things like branch cache and BitLocker and direct access on there. But with the 8.1 update, you get one more thing that you didn't get with 8, which is the Windows Store is now enabled by default on Windows to Go. So that means your apps will be accessible by, at least your Metro style apps, will be accessible by Windows to Go. And so if you get app updates and all, and you're one of these people who's using it on the drive, you'll still get these app updates and you'll be able to buy apps through the store or get apps downloaded through the store that are authorized by your employer if you use it that way. So it's interesting. There's a whole thing in this post about here's how it works. Here's how you deploy Windows to Go. Here's the security and data protection clauses around Windows to Go. It's a very helpful post because Windows to Go can be somewhat confusing, yet could be potentially very useful. So go check the Springboard series for that post.
Excellent. And the code name of the week is Somewhere I'd Like to Be Right Now.
Yeah. The code name of the week is, this is a funny code name. It's Ibiza.
Or if you are of the Hispanic persuasion.
Yes.
Ibiza.
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 Ibiza. Just say it like you list.
Thank you.
It's Ibiza. Have you ever been to Ibiza?
It's a very, very nice place.
Yes.
It's a rock and rolling place.
Yes. And you know what? This is a former Microsoft codename that is being reused, actually. So I wrote about Ibiza back in 2007, I think it was, when it used to be the codename for something Microsoft was doing around data synchronization around third-party products and devices, I think specifically around databases, if I recall correctly. And now they're reusing that codename, supposedly, to be the next version of the Windows Azure Management Portal. One of my good codename buddies provided me with that one. And so, yeah, it's kind of interesting. Microsoft reuses a lot of code names, but this is a rather obscure one that they're reusing this time to mean something totally, totally different than it did in round one. So if you hear Ibiza now, think about Windows Azure Management Portal.
If you're in Ibiza, you must go to a nightclub after midnight because they fill the place up with foam. And then you kind of disco your heart out in Ibiza.
Yeah, it makes so much sense that that's the code name for a Windows Azure Management Portal.
That's what I'd call it. It's a party every time.
Azure Management Portal is like a disco.
It is. Who knew?
Oh, my God. It's our beer pick of the week.
Yep, beer pick of the week. And Paul might even like this one.
I love this brewery, by the way.
Oh, yes. He's a Belgian. No, I mean that. He's a Belgian kind of guy.
This is like upstate New York, right?
It is. This is.
Yeah, these guys make an amazing Belgian. Oh, maybe this is it.
Yep. This may be it. So Omegang Brewery, Cooperstown, New York. They make a lot of really excellent beers. And this, my pick today is the Quad, which is very famous. It's called Three Philosophers. And I've never had it until this past week, which is crazy. I've seen it so many times, but I had it on tap this week and it was so awesome. It's got a little cherry in it. And a Quad is just basically a very sweet, low bitterness kind of beer, but usually very high in alcohol, like 9 to 13% typically. And the Quads were originally brewed by the Trappist brewers in Belgium.
Mm.
Yep. And this would be, if I was thinking of a great holiday beer, I would definitely go with Three Philosophers if you see it anywhere. It's really, really great.
Neat.
I think the one I've had is the Wit, you know, the wheat.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Just looking at it now, looking at their site.
Oh my God.
They do the Game of Thrones beers. If you've seen any of those, they do.
They're
those.
Really good.
Yeah. They're really good.
Yeah, this is a good brewery. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Upper New York State, great place to drink beer and not much else. So, no, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I used to go there.
You pretty much nailed that one.
Yeah.
I would tell you that.
It's good in the summer anyway. I wouldn't go there in the winter. Thank you, Mary Jo Foley. What a great scoop you had. Everybody must go to Fortune to read her initial articles about Steve Ballmer, and then, of course, all about Microsoft.com, where you'll see more as she reveals all bit by bit about the guy with the shoe fetish. First thing I came away with. So,
it's just like Rex Ryan.
You can also find Paul Theriot on the interwebs in several places.
It's getting dark, too.
It's getting dark. It's midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
It's dark.
Just him.
Paul is at All About Microsoft. I'm sorry, winsupersite.com. I said that again. Windows IT Pro, of course. He's an analyst for Penton Media, and his books are online. The Windows Phone 8 book.com and Windows 8.1 book.com. Am I right?
Yeah, Windows 8.1 book.com.
No point. 8.1 book.com. There's no point.
There's no point.
There is no point in Windows8.1book.com. Thank you, guys. We do this show 11 a.m. Pacific every Thursday. That's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. One more show, and then, I guess we'll do
is it
a
one
best.
More?
Well, yeah, next week, and then we'll do a best of the day after Christmas, I guess. And if you want to contribute to our best ofs, there is a page, twit.tv/best of. And don't worry if you don't know the time code and all that. Just whatever hints you can give us about the best moments from 2013. And then we'll kick things off once again next year at a new time, a new day. It's Wednesday at 11 a.m. instead of Thursday at 11 a.m. That's Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC. All that's the same. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. And we'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.